Welcome. This is William Evans, and you're listening to another Living World Conversation. Our guest today is Travis McFlynn, a Valley artist, and this is the second in a series of conversations. Thanks for coming back, Travis.
Thanks for having me back, Will.
You've had an unusual journey and educational experience.
Yes.
Tell us what you're creating now.
I am creating the foundation of a sacred space that will feed my grandchildren.
For how long?
At minimum, 7 generations. I like to say 111 generations.
When I hear you say that, I hear you telling me you're engaged in sacred work, a very joyful, sober, conscious way of standing tall and living.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Since finding your balance, you now realize the arts can be a healthy, healing, sacred practice.
Yes.
But at age 14, you were going out into the world, and that included getting into unhealthy addictions.
Yes.
Growing up in Aspen, you were aware of visible, famous men who people looked up to. People gravitated toward them, and mixed with all of that was the use of a lot of drugs.
Yeah, the smartest people in the room and the kind of idols of the adults that the children look up to all seemed to be partaking. It really was the coolest or the most progressed. They seemed to be mixed together. So at a young age, if you wanted to fast track towards enlightenment, really, which I think we're all searching for source or God or however you say it, but wanting to know the sacred, the perception was the direct path was imbibing.
And it turned out that's not true, but
no,
you had to figure it out for yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
In our conversations, you've told me the outdoor education program in Aspen was the big event of the year for you. And so a big step on your journey occurred when a school counselor presented you with a pamphlet for a facility in Utah.
Yes.
With amazing rope courses and the suggestion you would be out in the woods.
Yes.
What actually happened was you voluntarily walked into a lockdown facility in downtown Provo, Utah, which except for you was populated by kids who were there as wards of the state.
It is the truest sense of betrayal from my community and my elders, because I with all of my heart really was open to finding divinity and using all of the tools that they had presented me and that I had been mimicking. I literally had pulled back all the layers in my heart and was like, look at this. And this hot iron basically poked in there and cauterized it right at the core of betrayal. And the strangest part was I was like, no, I was the becoming the best version of you. Like, I was partying. I'm better at it than you are. I know more about it than you do. What just happened? And I saw how these kids in this place were stuck now in a revolving door, kind of like a floating in an eddy, that a lot of them... I mean, I don't know where any of them are, but I could imagine trying to get back out into the current for some of them was nearly impossible.
And all of you were subjects of an experimental pharmacologic testing program.
Yes. Yeah, this place is the prison industrial complex that's compounded by Big Pharma.
Eventually, you walked out of that facility. What made you leave?
Well, that is it. There's so much to this. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose. What I needed to see, I had seen. It was a combination of, I think that I had parents who were able to get me out of there, but because a lot of these kids didn't have parents at all. Kind of on my journey, being led by source or however you want to say it, I was shown something. seeing how every single one of the kids in there had to take from a little white cup multiple times a day or be getting in trouble for it, take their medication, eventually including me, set me up to basically, it was a kind of a deep dive into that there was a system that profited on our not being healthy.
And so you began to eventually realize addiction was not your primary problem. You were using substances and being given substances, and you took them in an attempt to soothe a lack of being in integrity with who you knew yourself, who you really knew you were.
Yes, absolutely. And there's levels to it.
Would it be accurate to say your problem was one of searching for guidance in how to be a male in this culture, and no one was stepping forward who knew how to do that?
Yeah, I would say that was the big one. And I think it's beyond just my own immediate family. It seemed to be kind of across the board. And it didn't matter how wealthy you were, where you were growing up, there seemed to be a purposeful disconnect that sons and fathers and family and tribes have with the sacred.
But you did benefit from some understanding you gained from the work of Gabor Mate, a Vancouver obstetrician, who explained some fundamentals of your situation.
Yeah, he was instrumental in putting words to something that I could feel and already knew, but having that his background, he wasn't a fringe theorist. He was an actual doctor.
And he explained beyond physical needs, there are fundamental human needs.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And those are attachment and authenticity.
Yes.
Tell us how you understand those basic needs.
I understand authenticity because my whole life I've had the voice that is me, that when I think about things or when I'm reading a book or when I have a knowing, you know, when I know I shouldn't do something or something's wrong, that thing says that to me is my authentic voice. And I know what it's like to suppress that to fit in or to even not even have my internal authentic voice have the basis or the foundation to know how to make a decision and feeling lost. And that kind of leads right into the needs that a young person would have to feel centered or whole or belonging, the right to be, and how, whether because the feeling of it all being numbed and, you know, blissed away, which would lead to addiction, or just fitting in. There's a phenomenon on the streets of the world where, and I don't know if it's still like this, but if you had a lighter, you know, or a cigarette to bum somebody, the people that you would meet along the way was astronomical, and they were all genius in their own way. And so finding these people that had amazing minds and hearts on the street was a big eye-opener. How is this all happening?
The first of those basic needs that Mate talks about is attachment. And he makes the point that human infants have to be looked after, and if we're not cared for, we don't survive.
Yes.
And there comes a time when authenticity, as it begins to emerge in a child, challenges attachment.
Yeah, I think a big one is directly related to the school system, well, and the medical system as well, but how, you know, the young child wanting to play and their authentic voice wanting play would get in the way of the parents 9 to 5 putting in the time to fulfill the obligations of the mortgage and the groceries, and how there would be a moment where that authentic self, when wanting to play, would be stifled because the parents are too tired and too, you know, overwhelmed. And so the child immediately learns that, hey, you know, even though I want to play, I don't talk about it, because then that sets off a chain of events. in my household that is very uncomfortable. So I will not say anything in order to keep the peace.
And Mate gives the example of a two-year-old wanting a cookie before dinner and the parents saying no and the child having a tantrum. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had the experience of being able to be within healthy anger. Mm-hmm. They've just seen rageaholicism. Mm-hmm. And so the child gets the message that they're not loved, and yep. they feel that, and they know they need it. They know they need the attachment. Mm-hmm. And so they suppress their authenticity. And that's a widespread phenomenon in our culture today, but it used to be essential when we were not living in cities, when we were in the woods and on the mountains. Mm-hmm. We had to be in touch with our authenticity and gut, mm. or we wouldn't survive.
Yes.
So both attachment and authenticity mm-hmm. are basic survival needs.
Yeah. That attachment grows into the adult that will never speak up about the dead-end job, and only upon retiring with a body that's worn out and broken, will it ever wonder why that just happened?
Yeah, and when that authenticity is suppressed mm-hmm. and we give it up, we lose connection to ourselves, mm-hmm. our feelings, mm-hmm. and our ability to discern the truth.
Yes.
Gabor Mate also tells us we live in a toxic culture.
Hmm. We do.
And healing happens when there's a reconnection. And if it doesn't happen, one lives out a lifetime without authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About 7 years ago, you moved to New York with a famous artist. Mm-hmm. And you watched what the two of you had together fall apart because of a darkness in what you were doing.
True.
And you realized the artistic benefits of that relationship, which included drugs, were overshadowed by a darkness. And until that realization came, you didn't remember. You were missing out on the dream of what you really wanted.
Yes.
What do you really want, Travis?
The health of the watershed, which is also the health in me and my children. Belonging to this place is not in a way that requires a caste system of jobs and bank accounts and money, but really inputting and building soil and passing on the genius of this place and how seasons work and how the stars work, but to really live as close to the land as possible.
And you've also told me you want to live the dream of what a man is here to do, have a family and be a father.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to sing those songs as the sun is rising with my posterity, knowing that we all understand each other and how to protect and make this place thrive.
Give us an idea of the magnitude and impact of drugs on young people in this valley.
Well, especially with the new drugs that are here, they don't see it coming and they die. And those reverberations not only destroy their parents, but it reverberates out into the world. And we're at war with, these are chemical weapons, biological weapons.
You're listening to KDNK and a Living World conversation with Travis McFlynn, a Valley artist. So in some ways, your off-the-path experiences were a preparation you maybe needed to become a man in this strange time we're all in at present.
Yeah, to the point where I really feel guided. I feel like a lot of the most dangerous or ridiculous crossroads or things that happen, I needed to experience them firsthand so that I can explain to my kids why it is that we don't do these things. Instead of just reading about a fairy tale about Big Bad Wolf wearing grandma's clothes, no, I was there. I know what it smells like. I know what it feels like. I've seen death.
And would it be accurate to say, with today's understanding, you realize you were searching for your right to be your authentic male self?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted that initiation. I wanted to understand why I was here, what I was doing, and I wanted to do it to the best of my ability. And what I ended up doing, I did to the best of my ability. I was the best at it. I would take it as far as it would allow me to take it every time. That was never what I was trying to do, but it really, I think, at the basis of it, the search for the sacred or source or God or whatever word you use for the all, wanting to have relationship with that and understand my place in it and to do the right thing really was the basis of it, and healing from that pain of not knowing or doing it wrong or, you know, getting that far out in the process of wanting to heal is wild. And so to be able to either look down from the, you know, the 40,000 foot view on it all or from the mountaintop, really kind of be able to put all those pieces together. Yeah, the things that in this moment in time that a father would need to tell his son are very different than what I would call the norm, which would be how livestock is moved through land or how water flows. We really are under attack.
And part of the toxicity that Gabor Mate says is in our culture,
mm-hmm.
is that there are lots of distractions.
Yes.
And no reliable maps for someone finding their way to their own authenticity.
Yes. You just reminded me of a story. When I was in Australia as a potter, and I worked with three Aboriginal elders, these three women, and they were explaining to me the imagery that they were painting on this pottery that I was making for them. And they don't have a history of pottery making, so this was a collaboration that was kind of put together through a major institution there, a university. But they were explaining to me about the song and the length of song and how these images are overhead mapping and how the song and the images fit together and its basis of how during this time of year, this is where the water is, and if you sing this song twice and basically take a left, I know that might sound funny, but that's where the water is, and that's where you need to be now because the moths will be coming out. And that just blew my mind, that these ideas of passing on strategy for survival in such a beautiful way, as opposed to, running from a kind of I guess this thing that is observing us, you know, kind of an artificial intelligence.
You're speaking of Aboriginal elders passing on survival strategies. Reminds me of what Cowan Sanaa, a Haida man, told me his uncle advised him. To be a man, you have to learn from water.
Mm-hmm.
Water is the most powerful of all our relatives, and yet it is the most humble. It always seeks the lowest point. Water always travels with a song. If there's an opening to be found or an obstacle to be overcome, water will find a way. But when water is making noise, be aware, because that is when it's demonstrating its power. So if we are to become men, we have to become kind and gentle to the weaker ones and to our sisters. We have to have our own song. We have to be ever seeking. And when facing an opponent, if you sit quiet like water, that other one will know not to cause you to make noise, because he might not survive. There's strength in kindness.
Absolutely. What's interesting about kindness is it ties back into what we were talking about beauty and how in natural order, all of the things that are powerful are also beautiful. And oftentimes they don't need to show that off. In fact, it's never shown off. I mean, except in like things that are poisonous, they're very colorful. True masculinity or real alpha knows that peace and kindness is the highest order.
So June is the month during which our culture honors men and fathers.
Very interesting. It's also when the longest amount of light is here as well, kind of the top of the light cycle. Interesting, too, because that's kind of, I think, the war on fathers is kind of the biggest kind of unseen threat in our culture. It seems like everything is undermining the father.
The darkness you talked about would try and put out that light.
Yes. Yeah, and now that I have experienced what it's like to kind of be in this realm without the strong father, and I'm not talking about just personally, I just mean as a whole, I see how quickly order falls apart when there is no one pointing the way correctly. The kind of cult of personality or this hero worship of idols, really, thinking back, if I think of all the names of men that I got to know or memorize, you know, they were all essentially examples of degeneracy. They're rock and rollers or even, you know, sports heroes, but, you know, their personal lives were just
And you were
chaos.
Distracted by them.
Yeah, you know, it is a, what would you call it? The kind of the anthem of distraction. We have a parade of...
False identities.
Yes. Follow the leader, you know? Step in line.
Yeah, I'll never forget. I was sitting on my back porch 19 years ago, this time of year, with Clifford Duncan, a Ute elder. And we'd had a wonderful time over on the other side of McClure Pass and came back. And he turned to me and he said, "It's tough to be a man. Society wants you to be one way. Your family wants you to be another way. Work wants you to do it their way. Religion tells you how to be. Your children tell you what they want. Your wife tells her version of what she needs. And your government commands you. And then there's you. Who are you?"
Right, yeah.
Who are you, Travis?
That is the ultimate question. I think that the tough part is knowing all along, but then watching yourself walk in the wrong direction, going along with the thing or doing the thing you know isn't good for you. And who I am is... I guess it's where the buck stops, or it's where the foot gets put down and things stop. And it starts with me. It starts with my addictions. It starts even simple things like voting with my dollar. When I buy stuff that I haven't done my homework on or I don't really know what's in it, I'm supporting that. So who I am, there's so many levels to it. You know, I am the manifestation of source that has the gift to be a father to a son.
You're the manifestation of source.
Yeah.
Important to remember that.
Yeah, yeah. It is a gift that I can fulfill that.
And that's a sacred gift.
It's a sacred gift. Absolutely. And that fulfilling that sacred gift is what I want more than anything. And that little voice inside of me that has kind of always been right or all-knowing, that's what it wants too. And
so you're getting internal affirmation.
Absolutely.
And what's it feel like?
It's complete stillness, really. It's calm. There's no chaos and there's no rush. Nothing's out of place. I mean, it's coming from this culture of, you know, high speed, everything. It almost sounds silly that just being is so amazing.
Just being aware is huge.
Yeah.
Just huge. And it's, in my experience, mm-hmm. it's inherently joyful and beautiful.
It is. In fact, one could be still enough to take in all the beauty. You know, there's no, I'm on my way to work, or, you know, what do you do? Well, I do this or I do that. And it's like, no, who are you? I am. And I'm taking it all in, and it is so beautiful.
Well, that is lovely, because you have a joyful and stable sense of what it means to stand tall.
Mm. Well, that's because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, really. And the main thing would be, and we're using source as the word for it, but the all. I haven't found a better way to say it yet, but we're really born perfect. We come with, it's not just that we have opposable thumbs and fluid in our ears that makes us balance. I mean, our capacity to not only love one another, but to input into the land, and when you watch it bloom, it's unreal how beautiful we really are. Already are, just as we are, not because we have a degree or a Ferrari or, you know the right people. We're born this way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Will.
This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Radio. You've been listening to a second Living World conversation with Travis McFlynn. Thank you for listening. Bring it in the